World famous Phil Henry show. Stick around because we got Frankie Sidoris Jr. That's Frankie Sidoris, rhythm guitar player, Phil Henry show fan, rhythm guitar player with Slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, and a Phil Henry show fan coming up next here on the world famous Phil Henry show.
Yeah, it's our real person interview week two.
They're on tour. They're in Memphis right now, but they're not playing Memphis. They were in Houston last night, and they're on their way somewhere else.
Well, life on the road as a rock star is quite arduous.
Well, it was fun to talk with Frank today. As you know, Frank is the son of Cleveland Frankie. Both Frank and his dad are big fans of the show. I think his mother is, too. As a matter of fact, I got a little bit of bio information on the family that I thought was really fascinating. Frank's dad, as you know, comes from Cleveland, Ohio. That's why they call him Frank, you know, Cleveland Frankie. His mother's from Charleston, West Virginia. His dad was a baseball player. Now he's a pit boss, casino pit boss. And his mother, Angela, is a show owner and producer of burlesque in Vegas. Frankie was born and raised in Las Vegas. Learned to play the guitar at the age of 15. He was a skateboard freak. We're going to hear about all of it now here on our, real person interview for this Friday.
Hello?
Hey, Frank, it's Phil Henry.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
I'm great, man. And thanks. We're really, really honored to have you. And because I've only done one other real person interview. Talked to Mo Collins from Fear the Walking Dead because I'm on a show with her. And now you're number two. So.
Oh, I love it, man. I'm honored. Believe me. Very cool.
I just listened to some of the tracks from your album, Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators, which is like Slash featuring, right? So it's not. And it's
yeah, it's the whole backstory. I mean, it's definitely become a band. In the very beginning, it all really stemmed from Slash just kind of doing his own solo album. It was his first solo album he had ever done, because post Guns N' Roses, he did a couple projects in between, you know, like Velvet Revolver,
right,
with Scott Weiland, and this was his first thing that he just came out as Slash, and he featured various artists such as like Dave Grohl, Ozzy Osbourne, Alice Cooper. They just did songs together, but he didn't have a band to tour that album. So he ends up putting a band together to tour it, and then as time went on, he eventually started writing songs with that band. And then it became its own unit.
I gotta let people know the connection between you and I. I know your dad, Cleveland Frankie, is his
of
name.
Of course,
BSP, and he's at Planet Hollywood. He sent me a message. Yeah, I'm off work at 4 a.m. and then I'll text you. So I don't know. His hours are crazy, man. That's like a showbiz family. But then he said to me,
showbiz family. Yeah.
Yeah, that's heavy. You grew up in Vegas, though.
Yeah, born and raised. It's interesting because as I tour the world and talk with people, I'm always interested in where people are from, and they ask me the same thing. I say Vegas, and they go, yeah, but where were you born? I say Vegas. Because it's a transient city. It's people, they move from the Midwest, from the East Coast. It's like Vegas is that hub for that. And, I was actually born and raised in that environment. And, contrary to popular belief, it has brought out some fairly normal people.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm reminded, though, forgive me, of the movie Bugsy. Bugsy Siegel, who says,
"Yeah,
he says we can have churches and schools. It'll be like a real town." This guy from the movie,
but exactly regular human things, exactly.
But he was right, and let me just tell people the connection between us, Frank, is that, and I'm honored to know that you've listened to our show over the years and that you enjoy what we do. And I just had this whole big thing on Facebook with people because I've got a bunch of fans from the old phone call radio show, and I have new fans from the podcast Netcast, and we're going through a really weird time right now with that. But I got to be honest with you, I enjoy what I do now more than I did when I was on radio. Maybe it's because I own the company and I do my own thing. But can I just ask?
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Yeah, absolutely.
Frank, let me ask you just one question about me, and then I want to talk about you. Do you listen to our podcast? Do you listen to our podcast on the road, or how do you check out what we do here?
Well, it's cool because I just, through my phone, I'll just listen to it, in the hotel every now and then. It's pretty easy. It's fairly, it's a nice system you got going there. It's been easier than ever, I have to say. Because over the years, I go fairly far back with you, I believe, because I remember one of the original websites and,
Yeah.
With the advent of I guess the future. It's just easier now
than ever. the mobile man. I remember when we went mobile. I was watching a NFL football, and they threw an ad up saying, "And we're now mobile." And this was 2011. I said, "If these guys are mobile, we got to do that," because they had football games on the phone. And I said, "We have to do that." It drove everybody crazy.
Right.
But we eventually did that. Can I just ask you, how far back? What's the first time, first show, first year, whatever that you remember hearing our show?
Well, I recall. And I forgive me for forgetting the character here, but I remember you were, that was the best, because my father, of course, the way he presented you to me was, "Hey, you really got to listen to this guy. He gets the craziest guests on, and people call in and they get pissed." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So, you know, he picked me up from school. And I remember you were, it was a gym teacher, and the gym teacher enforced hazing.
Oh, Vernon
Dozier. And it was great, the way you built it.
Yeah. Yeah,
who was the character?
Vernon Dozier talks like this.
It was Vernon Dozier.
Yeah, that's the guy. He's based on a real guy. He's based on my kid's high school football coach, a guy named Bill Riddell. He's a hell of a nice guy. And
yeah.
He used to call me Coach. "Hey, Coach, are you going to make fun of me on the show today?" I said, "Probably."
Most likely. Yeah, but I'll never forget it because, you know, it was just such a perfect, you know. And then I realized this is how you did it. Like, you just, you know, you kind of came in fairly soft with the I'm a high school coach and blah, blah, blah. And then you just came in hot out of nowhere explaining, like, you know, "Yeah, well, you know, we grease up the broom handle." It was so brutal.
And you know,
I was crying laughing. And then, you know, the people that called you up were losing their minds. And, yeah. I was hooked. So then eventually my dad explained to me. He's like, "That's the same guy." And I could not believe it. So
that's cool.
I think you were on XM radio at the time, like Extreme.
Yeah, we were.
I remember the station was called Extreme Talk.
Yeah, well, there's probably been a lot of those, but we were on Sirius XM for a while, just as a way of promoting the show. That was when I was with iHeartRadio, and everybody's doing everything for me. Now I own the restaurant, so I'm swapping. You know, I'm mopping out the can and cooking the hamburgers. If that's something you would want to do. So that's awesome. And you found me through your dad. And we got a million stories like that. Fathers and sons and cops, especially. Cops will say to me, "Yeah, we had a rookie." They'll get a rookie in the car, and they'll turn the radio on and be cruising around, and they'll lay it on their partner who's like a rookie cop, or maybe hasn't heard my show, and they'll do that. So that's cool. I got a lot of stories to ask you because I was a disc jockey originally. I was a big-ass music fan originally. I know you play rhythm guitar,
very cool.
And I listen to, and we're going to lay some tracks on people tonight on the show so they can hear, like, Driving Rain, and I love the opening track from the album's called, God damn it, what is the name of the album? I just had it here. It's
Living the Dream.
Living the Dream. That's it. Yeah, it's great, man. And I hope I'm not.
Oh, thank you.
I hope I don't offend Slash when I say that Miles Kennedy has a little bit of Axl Rose happening. I don't know. Do you hear that?
I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely the. I think they share a high register voice.
That's probably.
I mean, you're not incorrect.
Okay.
That, you know, but I'm with you on that.
So
to a point.
So Frank, you're growing up in Vegas. And you pick up a guitar when?
I was 15 years old,
15?
I believe. I had always been a musical guy, I guess. You know, I was always just a huge music fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, that really stems from my family because my father was he was always a rock and roller my whole life.
Yeah.
And, you know, nonstop, always listening to Alice Cooper and Zeppelin, AC/DC, you know, and it was just kind of part of my DNA.
Yeah.
And my mom was a music person, too. She was a dancer and all sorts of things like that. So I just grew up appreciating music, and then as time went on, the guitar just became an instrument for me to really take my music appreciation further, just to kind of, like I could listen to a Beatles song, but then to know how to play that song just takes that appreciation and that experience to another level.
That's what you wanted to do. You were curious about how that song, how that song was made, work it out on an axe, which is the curiosity I never had as a kid. You know, I did. I mean, every kid that I knew wanted to play guitar, but when I realized how hard it was like, forget it, you know.
Believe me, man, it's like having the guitar in the room at all. It's like you pick it up and you get you'd be furious because it's so frustrating, and then you put it down 10 minutes later, you know, you just come back to it. It kind of called to me, and I played it as much as I could, and it just, I don't know, there's never an age that, you know, you're too old to play or even try. That's the funny part. It's like you assume that since you didn't play piano as a 10-year-old, you know, I can't get into it. But it's like, that's one of those things that in literally 5 months, Phil, you would you would make incredible progress, and it's motivating.
I think it's not as bad as you think. No, I love your attitude, man. I think it's true. Especially anybody can do anything at any time in life. You know, I apply my trade as an actor occasionally, but I'll often say to people, "I'm 66, man." And they'll come back and say, "Yeah, but you're a new face at 66. You know, they don't have any old people who look like you, dude."
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Oh yeah, Frank, you play rhythm guitar, and rhythm guitar is, in my opinion, is like the mainstay of any rock and roll band. We all know the lead guitar player. He's the guy that, you know, he's Slash. He's got the pose and he's got the hair, but you got to drive that. And let me ask you, man, because there's all kinds of ways of playing rhythm guitar. This is a stupid question to ask. Did you always want to be a rhythm guitar player? I guess you would take any job they had for you there in the band initially when you went to work for Slash, right?
Well, the backstory was that I really learned a lot joining this band. I mean, I can't thank the guys enough. Essentially, just being in their presence initially, and as we go on. But the beginning of me playing guitar, what you want to do? It's like you want to play fast, or you want to try to play guitar solos and be Jimmy Page, And there, I don't think anybody really says, "Hey, I want to be a rhythm guitarist." But it's something that you have to be able to do all of it. I mean, I really think it's important to be able to get your way around on a guitar, like, in all facets of it, be able to play leads and play rhythm. But like you just said, I mean, rhythm is so much more important than a lot of people realize. And I mean, especially for a guy like Slash, it's just like, he doesn't want, he can't have a band of just people, playing out of time and
playing
just kind
lead
of all
guitar.
Over the place. It's like, it has to be tight.
Sure. I heard it said, and I'm coming from a different generation, maybe even a older generation than your dad, but somebody said to me once, the greatest rhythm guitar they ever heard was Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones, because it starts with the rhythm guitar.
Super groovy too. And that's the thing is, like, I'm a big, besides all the rock and roll, and I'm a big, like, funk and soul guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I really love James Brown. I love all that stuff. And what's funny is that you would think that is not as complicated as it is, but it's so precise, but it's so loose. So finding that kind of middle ground of being able to just, play tight, but still have a groove to it. It's just, it's important. And Jumpin' Jack Flash is a great example, because it's like, it's greasy,
Yeah.
The Stones have that. They have that kind of, it's dirty and it's fairly, it's not as tight as you'd expect. It's cool.
Can you name a couple of guitar players? And then I want to talk about, you guys are out touring right now. And where are you, in Memphis? I think that's where
today it's like a travel day kind of. We just played in Houston last night. So we have a drive all the way up to New Buffalo, Michigan.
Wow.
So we had kind of a mid-ish point. We just wanted to, have a little day off. So we're just here. We're going to, see the sights and have some barbecue. That's all we have planned.
That's awesome, man. That's in Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah.
In Memphis, Tennessee, or
I really love it here. Yeah, Memphis. It's really cool. I've been here only about 3 times, but every time it's a good hang, because we've done the Graceland tour, and then today at some point we're going to Sun Studios.
Oh wow,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah, it's heavy.
I read not too long ago that the original tour bus was created by the Blackwood Brothers, and the Blackwood Brothers were a gospel group, a four part harmony gospel group that Elvis Presley was a huge fan of. These dudes had the idea. J.D. Sumner, who's their bass player, big bass player, had the idea of, instead of flying everywhere or taking a train, they developed this tour bus concept, which now everybody uses. Are you guys on a bus, or are you?
Wow.
Isn't that...
we are on a bus, and that's a fun fact. I mean, I'm going to hit the guys with that. So the Blackwood Brothers.
The Blackwood Brothers, who held it. After World War II, for whatever reason, gospel music was really, really big in the United States. There was all kinds of music, but gospel was... It was charting, and so here come the Blackwood Brothers, who knew Elvis Presley as a kid. He'd hang around and probably he said things like, how do you record a record? Shit like that. I don't know. And they would answer however they answered, but they eventually saw him get...
You're right.
They eventually saw him get big. But I read this. Well, that's wild, man. These cats came up with the idea of a tour bus,
And it's funny to think about how the original buses that they used were very much, they're nowhere near the comfort level that we have now. It's like any bus now, even a low grade bus is still a nice hang, but like you got to consider they were very much, Greyhoundish, you know, all the chairs are facing forward.
Exactly.
You know, all style.
I'll bet. And probably sleeping on them wasn't all that, you know, great either. But
it's not even possible. I mean, kind of, I guess, you know, hanging in the aisle.
Frank, can you tell me about guitar players? You know, when I was growing up, I said this to somebody the other day when Chuck Berry died. I said, every kid I knew before Jimi Hendrix, every kid I knew who was learning to play guitar listened to Chuck Berry, which is absolutely true.
Yeah.
What about your generation, man? Who is the must-listen-to guy when you were learning to play the axe and when, you know, and you were getting better?
It's interesting because I think in my generation, it was like we had such a mix. It was such an amalgamation of just, you know, different guitar players and different styles, because you got to remember, like, I think when I was 15, it was, the White Stripes and the Strokes.
Oh, yeah.
All those kind of bands.
Yeah.
Those were the guitar heroes at the time. But, of course, you know, all of my friends and a lot of, like, even my guitar teachers, we just kind of, you know, you go back and you just look at the guys who wrote the book. And, you know, I played a lot of classical guitar growing up, too, if you could believe it. But my Zeppelin riffs.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was, you know, it was important. I loved the style and just that level of dedication. But guitar player wise, I got to say, for me, again, it always kind of goes back to Alice Cooper, because that's one of the first artists I remember hearing. And,
sure.
His two guitar players, I mean, they don't get enough credit, because they were definitely basing their whole style off of the Beatles. Like, they were just the super musical guy. And I don't know, the songwriting was just the shit. I loved it so much. But then, for me, it went Alice Cooper and then Alex Lifeson. I was a big fan of
Rush.
Rush growing up.
Yeah. I could thank my uncle for that. Who are the guitar players in Alice Cooper? I don't even know who they were.
There was Glenn Buxton.
Yeah.
Glenn Buxton and Michael Bruce. And it was cool because, you know, their backstory was that they picked up the instrument and started a band with Alice, and that was it. Like, it almost blows my mind that that's even possible, that you could just, like, hey gang, let's, you want to get together and, you know, write a couple tunes, and then they'd cover the Beatles. And what better artist or what better band to follow in their footsteps than the Beatles? Because essentially they did the same thing. It's like they just come up and they're just writing beautiful songs, but just killer guitar solos, and it's just the riffs. I mean, everybody knows them. I love it.
It's really funny. Sometimes I hear about bands the way they began, and you figure they just learned how to play their, or they were learning to play their instruments as they were coming. You're like, how is that possible, man? You know, that you can't.
That's what I'm saying. And no matter how much I try, I'm like, man, I can't do that. Like, who does that? Ridiculous.
So we got here, Frank Sidoris, and they call you Frankie Jr. or, you know, you Italian guy.
Either way, Frankie, okay. You know, in Vegas, a lot of, you know, I think everybody in the world knows my dad out there. And, for the most part, I'm Frankie. That's how that works.
Hey, so your family's, your father's a musician? I never even asked your dad what he does. I know that he's got a lot of juice.
Frank Sr. came from Cleveland, Ohio, and he just, he was a baseball player.
Oh, okay.
He went to college at UNLV in Vegas. He moved in 81, and he ended up just working in casinos. He's been a pit boss for years and years.
Awesome.
He was there for the openings of pretty much every casino in town. And my mother, she came from West Virginia, Charleston, West Virginia, and she was a dancer, and she danced at the Riviera in the 90s, and then she became a producer, and now it's incredible. She has 4 shows on the Strip. She's a producer of burlesque shows.
Oh, dude.
She's a legend.
That's awesome, man. Well, what's your mom's name? Let's get her.
Her name's Angela. Yeah, Angela Stabile. She produces ex-burlesque, and there's an ex-country, ex-rocks, and it's cool, man. She's really killing it out there. It's amazing to watch, because she just, I mean, her story was so fun, because I remember she came back from New York, and I was in middle school, and she's like, I saw the producers on Broadway. I want to be a producer. And it's like, okay. And then literally 2 years later or so, it's boom. She has a show at the Aladdin. It was incredible.
You love
how it all worked out.
I love people like that. And I'm envious of people like that, man. You know, they just decide they're going to do something, bang, they do it. Cause I'm basically personally
very lazy. I mean, I dig getting out of bed. You know what I'm saying? I just want to watch TV and shit. You know, as much fun as I have.
I feel you.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Maybe there's something inside of me as a musician, you know, because I don't go to bed till like 3 o'clock in the morning.
My whole life has been that way. I got to say that, again, so my family, they both worked in casinos. They met in a casino, my mom and dad.
Awesome.
I believe it was a Tropicana. And then, you know, when I was a kid, they were both at the Riviera, so I'd wait up for them at night. I'd be up till 2 in the morning as a 3-year-old. That just became my schedule my whole life, so it's never changed. I'm always up till 4 a.m. for the most part.
That's it, yeah, and of course, if those are your hours, the rest of the world thinks you're just something weird, you know, a lot of times I get people say, okay, how about 10 o'clock? No, nothing before noon, man, nothing before noon.
Oh, dude, that's me. That is 100% me.
So we're talking here with Frank Jr., Frank Sidoris. BSBs, you know, his dad, Cleveland. Frankie is such a sweetheart, and your dad has invited us to Vegas so many times for so many things, and I can never get my shit together. You know.
Yeah, well, anytime you do, of course, I mean, my father, between my mom, my dad and I, we got shows we could take you to. You got all sorts of things. You're covered.
We got to do like a Phil Hendry event there so that everybody who listens to the show can hang there.
Oh, absolutely. And there's plenty of avenues and venues for that. I mean, there's no doubt.
Yeah. But it's just like I say, I'm lazy. No. we'll get it together. We'll get it together. So I want to find out, Frank, when you were in the band The Cabs, right? That was the group you kind of transitioned from?
The Cab.
Oh, sorry, The Cab. Just... Yeah. I sound like one of those lame asses that I used to talk to when I was a kid.
So you what's the name of the group again? The Jethro Tulls?
So you were that group. And did you audition for Slash's band? Did they, like, hold auditions? Did they...
Yeah, so here's the backstory. It's a fun one because it was just... it was as hectic as could be, but it was just perfect for the story. Mm-hmm. I loved the way it went down because, you know, I could have been happy either way. So to encapsulate here, so I was playing in a band called The Cab. So they were based in Vegas, and I got hired by them. They had fired a couple people in their band. They regrouped, and I was on tour with them. We played Australia and Japan and blah, blah, blah. It was kind of like, imagine it was more like pop rock.
Sure.
It wasn't as rock and roll, you know, but it was very cool. So, so I had known the drummer of Slash's current band. So remember when I said that Slash had a solo band?
Yeah.
He put together a solo band. So I had known the drummer, just in passing through mutual, Las Vegas musical friends, you know? And so we had just got coffee throughout the years and, you know, there was no promise of anything. I would just hang with him and get some insight because he played with the Guess Who. He had played with, you name
some
it, everybody.
Traps,
he's been all over the world. And so I'm on tour, and I remember we played the Roxy in Los Angeles, and Slash had come out to the show because he had been kind of told about me because they were looking for guitar players. I kind of got an idea that. Brent had told, his name is Brent, the drummer, Brent Fitz. He told me that they were looking for guitar players. So Slash came to the Roxy, saw us play, saw me play, and then, you know, there was no guarantee of anything. But fast forward to me being in Canada, we're touring Canada, and I get a call from Brent. And he said, hey, I mean, if you can come down to this audition, it's not an open audition. We're just calling people that we think would be good.
Yeah.
So a handful of people went down there, I mean, for about a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a very small amount of time to kind of really get together these songs just to really, you know, because I knew Guns N' Roses songs. I mean, I love those songs.
Sure.
I was always a Slash fan in general, but it was one of those things like, okay, I got to learn it. I got to really get down on it. So I get a call last minute. It's like, okay, your day, if you can make it, it's Super Bowl Sunday. It was 2012.
Oh, shit.
So, and I'm in Toronto, and it was just perfect because it was the only, I think, 2 days that we had that were off in a row.
Yeah.
So I end up taking two guitars. I flew from Toronto at 6 a.m. Toronto time, fly into LAX and the rehearsals in Burbank. And I barely made it on time in a cab that cost $100. It was just like, it's ridiculous.
Take a cab from Toronto.
I go in there.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous. So anyway, we we start playing, and it was so cool because I walk into the rehearsal space, you know, kind of. Of course, I'm nervous, but what was so fun about it was that it was the full band, kind of. Yeah. You know, it wasn't just like, "Hey, show us what you got, kid!" Like, yeah. Pick up the guitar and you know, go for it. It was more like, "All right, we're all going to jam together because Slash is. He really needs to know that we can all sync up and lock in.
Sure.
You know." So we end up playing Paradise City. We played a couple of his solo stuff, and the moment we played the first note, it was kind of like, you know what, I'm not nervous anymore. This is just awesome because the whole vibe, the overall vibe was just awesome.
You had a smile and hanging.
It was a good time.
You had one of those auditions that in acting you have that. You walk out and you go, well, I don't know if I got the job, but that was fantastic, you know.
That's exactly it. Like, it was one of those things that I remember thinking as we were finishing mid Paradise City. I was like, you know, if I'm not the guy right now, I don't care, because I could literally fly back to this tour and be like, yeah, I fucking jammed Paradise City with Slash and on with my life, whatever.
That's sweet.
You know?
I hear you.
He was cool as hell. He's like, hey, thanks for flying in. Thanks for, I know it was such short notice. Thanks for being here and, you know, take care. And so I end up, I got coffee with a friend in LA, and I, you know, that next morning I flew to Buffalo, New York and met up with the tour, got right on stage like an hour later, and I get a phone call, I think it was 2 days later.
Yeah.
That was in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Oh, no, sorry, let me back it up. I get a text from Slash, and he says, hey, it's Slash here. I'm going to call you tomorrow at 2 p.m.
Sweet.
I was like, okay.
So then you know what that was
I get
about.
A phone call, and he's like, hey, by unanimous decision, we want you in the band. What do you say?
How cool.
And I said, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm busy. I still have to do some shit, so thanks for the offer, though.
I really appreciate the call, man, but I'm just so busy right now.
So I want to know, Frank, because, and I'm asking you a lot of questions about you, and maybe some of the folks, the fans out there want me to ask you one about me. So do you have a favorite show that we did? And then we'll get back to you. Do you have a favorite Phil Henry show or a favorite Phil Henry bit or anything that, I know you mentioned one that was pretty funny.
That's a hard question, because believe me, man, over the years, I've been preaching your... Well, here, let me back it up. So, again, driving with my dad, you know, we'd go to Arizona all the time. We'd go to California all the time.
Sure.
And before I ever knew of Phil Hendry, we would listen to things like Art Bell.
Yeah.
I knew Art Bell, and it'd be hilarious, right? But and then on ESPN, I'd see Jim Rome. And as time goes on, I'm like... I'm listening to you do impressions of these guys. I'm like, who the fuck does an Art Bell impression? Who does a Jim Rome impression? It's just so, I don't know. I just felt like it hit so close to home that I was hooked. And the subject matter, you know, you're talking with Cupid in another dimension and shit like that. It was my absolute favorite. Yeah.
Those Art Bell shows were fun.
But it's hard to say, character-wise.
Yeah.
Oh, no, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, those Art Bell shows are fun because you could go just nuts. I didn't have to play to callers or
anything. Absolutely.
Yeah. And
you could do whatever you want. I mean, because multiple dimensions are okay with the Art Bell universe.
Yeah. And although we went over the line one time when we had Art and General Johnson Jameson and some bottles of wine and Area 54 or Area whatever that thing is, 52 or 54. And
51.
When they came to, their pants were off. So it was to this day, we don't know what they did. But all right. So I want to ask you something, man.
Oh, and let me say, I got to say that Herb Sewell.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever
yeah.
Herb Sewell showed up, he was, I'd have to say he might be my favorite. It's really hard to say because as a musician and as a guy who sings and is around singers all the time, when you do Margaret Gray singing and you call her out for being flat, and you're like, hey, you could sing it flat if you want, but I mean, you're reading the wrong lyrics. It's just the best, man.
You're flat, and she thinks she's great. You know, she thinks she's fantastic. I'm a professional
singer.
She's
a classic starlet.
Yeah. Hey, Frank. So many bands now are literally discovered in their town. Like I was thinking of the group. The name of that band escapes me, but For Those Still Sleeping, I think is the name of the group from St. Cloud, Minnesota. Because I've started listening to a lot of metal here. As I get older, I try to stay connected to the culture, and metal and hip hop seems to do it for me. But these cats, nobody goes to L.A. or New York anymore to be discovered, do they, man? It's just, you can cut a damn track in your, you know, with your Pro Tools anywhere.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, coming from Vegas, I've seen a handful. I mean, I've seen a lot of bands actually come out of the hometown circuit.
Yeah.
And I think because it's not as polluted I mean, maybe polluted is the worst, not the right term for this, but like, it's not as saturated, you know?
Yeah.
There's not a billion people trying to make it. I mean, comparatively to Los Angeles or New York. But I don't think that the L.A. market is completely dead by any means. I mean, if you really do put the time in, I've seen it happen. It's like, I mean, to the public eye, people that make it, they just assume, you know, oh, they just got discovered and it's on. They got a billion hits on YouTube and now they're a star. It's like, no.
No,
for the most part, I'd say 99% of the time, those bands work their asses off.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, they're working these jobs in Los Angeles, they're taking what they can get, and then guess what? They blow up. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I would say L.A. still, I mean, I can't say from experience in New York because I'm not there enough, but L.A. is very much a second home to me. I'm constantly there, so I believe in it. But
Are you there, Frank? Are you recording when you go to L.A.? Are you in a studio?
Yeah. So we just this last album, "Living the Dream," we did in Slash's studio, and it was in his studio up in. It's cool because, you know, again, I'm in L.A. all the time, but this time we were over in Woodland Hills, which I was never familiar with. And I don't know. What part of L.A. are you in?
Well, I grew up in Arcadia, which is where Santa Anita, Pasadena, Arcadia. And now I'm out here.
Okay.
I'm 40 miles north of the city now, brother, at Port Hueneme, man. I'm on the beach up here, Silver Strand Beach.
Wow.
Yeah, at Channel Islands Beach. Yeah, so and this is the house I got. This is the house I got in the divorce. You know, and my wife got the
good
other.
For you.
Yeah, that's I'm 8 million miles from anything, but so when you say L.A. and you say Woodland Hills, you're basically talking about L.A. because it's such a megalopolis.
Yeah, yeah, it's just kind of all over the place. So, you know, we rehearse in Burbank and then we rehearse in Woodland Hills as well and record and all over. So it's kind of, you know, I'm very familiar with it, but like, you know, we spend enough time essentially more. I'd say majority outside of Hollywood. We're just kind of the northern. You know, north of Hollywood-ish.
Oh, sure.
But, yeah, it's kind of where we're at for the most part. But, yeah, Woodland Hills, man, it was something so foreign to me because growing up in Vegas, it was everything's easy, everything's cheap, and there's parking, and there's no traffic. And then my experience in L.A. was always just insanity in Hollywood. But then I discovered the Burbanks of the world and the Woodland Hills is
there's like, a little more parking, man.
It's so easy.
Yeah, exactly. There's a little more parking, a little more. The way I work I work Hollywood and the way I work LA is I just look for the first sign that says public parking and I go ahead and I spend the $9 million an hour, whatever it is. And
hey, throw down the $9 million an hour. It's easy.
Yeah, you know what, man? Because I ain't going to mess. Although now, because they take credit cards at parking meters, that's become the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. So I can just park and stick a damn card in there and not look for change.
Oh, my God, dude. Absolutely. Because anytime I'm in Hollywood, that became. I just remember when that was a dream. It was like. I have to go to L.A. and I have to get quarters. Like, I hated that. That drove me absolutely crazy. Who does that?
Quarters.
But now we don't have to do that, which is it's a godsend.
Man, you're a hell of a guy. You got a great family. Your father is such a sweetheart and such a stays in touch with us. And he's very proud of you, man. I mean, he just speaks glowingly of you. And how does your mom feel? I mean, and you said your mom and dad would be very excited. What's your... no, you didn't. Actually,
I'd say she feels quite the opposite. I'm just kidding. She's great.
Your dad messaged me and said...
I'll never impress her.
Yeah, your dad messaged me and said his mother and I are going to be really excited to hear this. So...
Oh, yeah. She's always supported me my whole life, man. And it's funny because, I mean, I skateboarded my whole life.
Uh-huh.
I mean, up until my guitar playing, essentially. And the transition was quick. It was like once I started playing guitar, it was just like, you know, this is – I was trying to go pro, man. That was my life. I skateboarded. That's all I did.
Wow.
And, she supported me then. And it was like, okay, well, I'll drop you off at this place. You do your thing. Get some footage and see how that goes. And then she was literally the one that – she wanted me to play the drums early on. Like I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, man.
I mean, what, like for second grade, she's like, can you, you know, she bought me a drum kit and I had maybe one lesson and it just didn't call to me until way later, which is funny. But then she was like, look, all right, I know a guy, he'll teach you guitar. It was the moment I mentioned it. I was like, hey, I want to play guitar. And she's like, okay, I got a guy.
He was
a blues guy who taught me all my first chords and my first couple scales and he moved away. Then I got a classical teacher because of her. She was just like, look, we're not going to, since your teacher moved away, you're not getting off the hook. Like, I want you to play guitar.
You're going
to
stick with
it. You know,
it.
It's like, because I still wanted to skate every now and then. She's like, look, you need to just, you know, focus on it. We'll go for it. And begrudgingly, I did at times. And oh my, it just paid off, man, because there was that moment where it was like, oh, I'm playing the guitar, and she doesn't have to, you know, twist my arm in any way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And as it went, man, it's like she's her and my dad. I mean, I really couldn't have asked for a better support system. And it's funny because they were never, there was no coddling either. It's like, you know, I played baseball, and my dad's a baseball guy, and it was cool because, you know, if I was doing something wrong, he was like, hey, you know, let's fucking get it, let's get it going here, throw it like this. So, okay, cool, you got it. And then. And then there was some congratulations as it went. So,
well, you know, it really counts, man. Great parents are what it's all about, you know. And there's a big difference between people that had that support like you had and people that don't. And it's, you know, because you had great parents, you don't really know what it's like to grow up without. And that's good. I'm glad you don't. Because it is a struggle.
True.
You know, it is a struggle, man, when you're trying to figure this world out and there was nobody to really guide you. So, just like I said, your dad's very proud of you, and we're really happy to have you with us. We're really excited to find out that you listen to us, and I'm going to play the shit out of your album here, forthcoming, man.
Man.
Especially on the show. Frank, I appreciate it, man. I could keep talking here, but we've already gone like 50 minutes.
Oh, no worries. But, hey, I got to say one thing real fast that I meant to say earlier is that when you... You were saying that you're more of a face now acting, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, I just love to see, because I thought, you know, at first when I first heard of the Phil Hendry show, I was like, oh, this is the father son hang. This is my thing. And as it went, you just kept popping up. Like, you know, more recently, how about this? I remember I was flying to Brazil, and I'm watching TV on the screen, and I was watching Modern Family.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There you are.
Yeah, Booker. Yeah, played that character. Yeah, a lot of times, you know.
I just love how you were a voice guy. You played voice dude. That was
played
so
a voice
great.
Guy, yeah. Well, they'll do that, too. They'll say, okay, let's bring Phil in. He can play the disc jockey. But, you know.
And my new favorite is the Principal Vagina. Couldn't believe it. Right when you showed up, I was like, oh, my God. It was just
Rick and Morty.
My favorite was, Rick and Morty. He said, hi, Principal Vagina here. The name is real, possibly Scandinavian. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's Justin. Is Justin Roiland, man, is he's a brilliant guy. He voices, he writes the show. It's crazy. I met him when they were just producing.
How did they get a hold of you? I was curious how that connected.
Through my agent, you know, I had an agent, voiceover agent, and then they said, go over here. There's an audition for this show, this Rick and Morty show, and it hadn't been on the air yet. And I drive to Burbank, and I get out on Magnolia to a house that looks as if it's been abandoned for like 5 years. There's weeds growing everywhere. There's tinfoil in the windows and shit. I'm like, I think I got the wrong place, you know? And I look in the window, and I see that there's furniture with cloth draped over it, and there's a barbecue that's just overturned. And then I hear, hey, Phil! And I look in the back, there's a back house, and that's where they were. And I went back there and auditioned for that thing. Yeah, Justin was there. And it was one of those things where he goes, well, I got the show, and he pitches it, and he gets on the air, and it's a hit, you know, like within six months, the thing just, just boom, you know. So and when I say to people like you, I play Principal of Vagina, they flip out. You know, they just flip the hell out on Prince Gene Vagina. I like the name Gene. That's his first name. You know?
Did they come up with that, or who said, who threw the name Vagina?
Oh, that was Justin. You know, he wrote it, and it's one of those great names. You know, I love that. I like the whole idea of taking something that's really grotesque and working it into a name. You know, like you could almost like, you know, hi, I'm Hal Toilet. I know my name's weird, but you know, you just do shit like that. You know,
you have the preface, like you have to kind of like give some sort of disclaimer because you know someone's going to question it, but you've been through it for so many years that you just breeze on through. You go, it's possibly Scandinavian. Anywho, I just...
Well, that's how you sell it, though, because no real person says, hi, my name is Al Toilet, and not say anything. You know, my name's Toilet, I get the jokes all the time, and oh, okay. Hey, Frank, thank you so much, man. All the best of luck.
It really was an honor, Phil. Thank you so much.
No, it was great.
I really couldn't thank you enough for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you with us, man, and we'll be looking at the further adventures of the band slash featuring Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators and Frank Sidoris. And, man, maybe, you know, get back into town, man. We can hang out again. But I appreciate it very much.
I was going to say, we're playing the Palladium October 16th. It's the last show of our leg here of the state. So if you and anybody's free,
oh, cool.
I got you on the list, man.
Oh, awesome,
easy,
man. Awesome. We'll do it. Thank you. And I'm sorry I missed you the other night, man, but it's suddenly, like, I looked at the time and I said, there's no way I'm going to be able to get into L.A. and see this and get everything done that I had to do. And I apologize to your dad.
Don't even worry. I understand. It was hectic because it was the first show of the tour, so don't worry about it. But, yeah, if you are free mid-October, I got you covered.
Thank you very much, Frank. And all the best to you and all the best to everybody and to anybody in your life right now who's important to you. Well, you don't have to say anything.
Back at you.
Okay, man. Thanks,
all right,
Frank.
So, yeah, you take care, man.
Bless
Thanks
you,
again.
Man. Have a good rest of the tour, too.